Scooby Doobs. Oh, Michelle, look, here we are again. It's your favourite and my favourite and their favourite, eavesdropping.
Eavesdropping.
Their favourite earwigging moment of the whole week in a world devoid of any earwigging.
I'd never even heard of earwigging before.
Haven't you?
Recently, no. But I think it means eavesdropping.
Yes. Earwigging. Yes. We could have called it earwigging, couldn't we? Earwigging. No, it's not the same.
It doesn't, no. It's not the same.
Yeah.
Eavesdropping.
So how have you been? I heard that you were just having a bit of a swoosh down the ski slopes.
Yes, I was. It was a beautiful day. Beautiful day. I'm not very good, but I give it my best.
Did you go arse over tit?
No.
Well, then you must be all right.
I managed to stay on two skis and it was fine. It was fine. So how are you? I saw you've got snow.
We've got snow, but already it's starting to piss away. I'm sorry that your partner thought it was dick and balls. Which I said to my husband, he said, is that the professional term for not very much coverage?
Do you know what? He was actually referring to your vase.
Oh. Now I get it.
He was like, her vase looks like dick and balls. Not the snow.
That's why I said it's not a competition, Andreas.
And I said that to him and he was like, I don't get it. And I was like, me either.
Because I thought it was about the amount of snow. Because you sent a picture of this beautiful little house, like a gingerbread palace, covered in meters of snow. And I just had this little bit of like bit of whingy old kale covered with a droplet of... Oh, look, never mind. We got our wires crossed there. Dick and balls. Now I understand. Yes, it does look a bit like dick and balls if you were to like be Picasso or someone. Listen,
there
Michelle,
you go.
The last Extra Droppings episode. Do we have any apologies to make about that?
I don't think we do. I think this is the first time we've had no apologies.
No apologies as such, but I would like to say you dropped a couple of hell bombshells towards the end there, or beginning and end. I'll tell you what they are. First of all, number one, your partner doesn't know who Steven Spielberg is. Now, that's a concern. Secondly...
Oh, look, as soon as I said E.T., he was like, oh, yeah, that guy.
That guy.
But look, he's
not
Swedish.
Interested in that.
He's Swedish. You've got to
think Swedish people do know who, you know, do know about movies, don't they, and stuff.
Well, he doesn't know who Ben Mendelsohn is.
Well, that's fair.
Not I even asked his sister. Ben. No one knows.
Oh.
Anyway.
No one knows. People know, just not them. Just not two people that you know.
Two Swedish people from the same family.
Oh, gosh. Well, I'll tell you what. There are a couple of apologies. First of all, there was the bombshells, which were you giving Steven Spielberg advice on how to edit one of his most incredible films of all time. I like that little touch. Thought that was cool.
Listen up, mate. Listen up. Get the editing snips out.
And the other one was, what was the other one? Moon landings. How could I forget?
I knew you were going to say moon landing.
And I know I said it at the time, but Michelle, is your whole disbelief in the moon landings purely because the dog didn't make it?
No,
and
it's
two professionally
just, it's
trained
baked.
Astronauts
it's
managed
baked.
To make it. You think?
It's baked.
Why would
baked.
They bother? You're scaring me.
Not the first time.
I know the apology that I wanted you to make. It was for Aidan Gillen. Aidan Gillen, bless his heart. Now, do you know who that actor is? I have a feeling you're thinking of someone completely different.
I think I might be thinking of someone else.
Because he's not weird looking. He's the guy that was in Queer as Folk, and then he went on to be in Game of Thrones as Littlefinger. I was going to send you a picture of him, but I didn't want to throw you off the scent.
Oh, I know who
Peaky
he is.
Blinders.
I know who he is.
And guess who he played in Project Blue Book?
Who?
Dr. J. Allen Hynek.
No.
Yep. The main guy that you were talking about last week.
Do you know what? I now know who he is. And it's not who I thought it was. I don't even know who I thought it was. But it wasn't
weird,
him.
He?
No, he's quite handsome in a you know, smooth-faced, creep way. Anyway.
Talk about backhanded compliments. Poor Aidan Gillen.
I'm the queen of those.
I'm sorry. Okay, so that was the connection. Was that he played? Actually, we should have done a little bit more Googling before we did that episode, because not only was he Hynek, and we could have included that in there, but also I mentioned Betty and Barney, Hill, which were an American couple in the 60s, I think, who were abducted by aliens. And that's a fascinating story. And I've just started listening to a serialized podcast about them. But
well, let's rip it off and do one ourselves.
Do you know? Great idea. But you remember, I remember I said something about the Zeta Reticuli.
Comet ping pong.
Well, apparently that was what their whole thing was called, the Zeta Reticuli incident, because that is where they were taken.
What the fuck?
That's what they claim. Well, obviously we need to do a bit more deep diving, but oh, bless you. Good to see you're putting your face space. What was the other one? Hands, eyes, space, face, or whatever it is. Our government have an ad. Hands, space, face. That's the ad. Wash your hands. Give people space. Cover your face.
But that's the old sneeze into the crook of the elbow trick.
Well, no, it was very good.
Yeah.
What was the Aussie? Well. What was the Aussie one? Slip, slap, slop.
Oh, slip, slop, slap.
Ah. Slip on a slip on a shirt, slap on sunscreen, and slop on
you
a
You got
hat.
It wrong.
That's not right.
Slip, slop, slap.
Slip, slop,
and,
slap.
And do you remember Norm had a shirt? Slip on a shirt, slop on sunscreen, and slap on a hat.
I love a health slogan. Norm was a different guy. He was a big purple-haired couch potato in the 70s who they were trying to get people off their sofas, and it was called Life Be In It.
Oh, that's
Be
right.
In It Today,
live more of your life.
Lore of your life. Talk about getting things wrong. I also called Brian Cox an astronomer.
You did. I didn't want to mention that at the time. I let you go. It's like you're texting. I just let it go now.
Oh, gosh. Well, listen, anyway, today's podcast, we didn't do a lot of research because this is actually a story that was sent to us by a really good friend of mine, and you know her now as well, Linda.
Hi, Linda.
She... This is where the supernormal comes into it. There's nothing supernatural about what she went through, but definitely supernormal. And basically, she survived.
She's a survivor.
She sent me a letter that I'm going to read out.
Fantastic.
Is that all right? She sent it under the hashtag of Fuck Linda's Got Cancer.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. And she said to me, I really struggled to actually sit down and write about this. I said yes straight away when you put the call out for people's stories, experiences, etc. I was in. But when it comes to going back in time and revisiting a really dark place, talk is cheap. I guess the reason I did finally sit down to write about this is because if for a moment I can help someone who is experiencing something similar, and she's keen to point out here, Michelle, not the same, it's never the same. Everybody's journey is different. And she is very, very aware of that. Back to Linda's voice. Then I have done the right thing, and for that I am happy.
Do you know what? I think it's really brave of her because, as you know, I've had a few people in my life who've had cancer, and it really, when they talk about it, it throws them right back into that dark place. So good on you, Linda, for having the courage and the balls to put pen to paper, because it does... It can take you down a dark wormhole. So
exactly.
Alrighty, let's hear.
Okay. This particular aspect of my story, and I say that deliberately because my story is longer than this one thing, and I really want people to remember that. I am not just a woman battling breast cancer. I'm a wife, mother, daughter, sister, cousin, friend, teacher, and I am not the sum of that one thing.
It's true.
Which is true.
And none of us are, but I think... When you have an illness, it must define you. Yeah, it really can.
So my story begins on the 14th of May 2018. I had just returned home from a fantastic holiday to Vietnam and Cambodia with my sister for her 50th birthday. I had received an injury at work, and she doesn't say what that injury is, but I know. She works now in the high school that we went to as teenagers.
Cute.
But before that, she was at the other one. I believe that a student threw a rubbish bin at her, like one of those great big metal fucking bins.
What the fuck?
Hurled it at her. So she's
Jesus Christ.
She's playing that down. Yeah. So she received
a little bit. One flew over the cuckoo's nest.
What it's like working with. Well, I shouldn't say that. Really, teenagers are lovely. They're just expressing themselves. Anyway, she received this injury at work about 18 months previously and had seen so many specialists about the pain I was experiencing in my left shoulder. Back to Linda. Sorry, I flipped in and out of Linda's voice then.
I knew you were Linda.
Sorry about that.
Channeling Linda.
So she's got a bad shoulder, basically, from a bin being hurled at her. Back to Linda. It had become so bad that I really struggled to write on the board at work, which, as you can imagine, is an issue for a teacher. I had to either hold my left arm up with my right to write or get kids, students, sorry, to write stuff for me. I was scheduled to see a shoulder surgeon about a shoulder reconstruction when I asked my doctor if I could have an MRI. Now, clever thinking here, guys. Just take heed. This is the bit where you pin this and think, next time you have an ongoing injury, fucking get an MRI.
Mm.
And then get another one. She asked for an MRI before she went because she knew that the surgeon would require one and didn't want to waste any more time as the pain was horrendous, indescribable and unrelenting.
Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the fact that she couldn't even write on the blackboard. I know, that's intense.
Yeah. So she asks for this MRI, clever girl. So her GP said, sure, they're expensive, but you're right. So well done, Linda, for doing that. I should have known something. This is Linda's voice. Something wasn't right that day. I scheduled my MRI and went in harassed, irritated and in pain, looking at the clock to get back to work. When I got home from work that afternoon, my son said, your doctor's been ringing you. You need to call them. I did and missed my GP, but was told to come in before work on Monday morning. Already your blood's running cold, right?
Oh, my God. Because no, they don't call you straight up like that unless something's wrong.
I'm going to segue out of this story just for a second to a much more lighthearted medical emergency that I thought I had once, Michelle, and you were there for me on the other end of the phone when I went for a battery of, you know, when you first get into a relationship and you go and have all the sexual health checkups. Well, mm-hmm. I did that. And then my doctor, the doctor's receptionist called me one afternoon at work and I was just about to leave and go to this exhibition with my boyfriend, now husband. And this woman rang and said, you need to talk to the doctor about your test results. And I was like, okay, why? She said, I can't tell you. I said, please, can you tell me? Because I am shitting myself right now. What have I got? What's wrong with me? And the way she said it was really conspiratorial and was really scaring me. And I was like, please tell me. And she said, oh, no, I shouldn't tell you. I said, you have to. You can't leave me hanging like this. She said, all right, you've got chlamydia. And I was like, what?
What?
I was so panicked. Don't you remember this? Then I called you.
I do. This is ringing bells.
You Googled it for me or whatever you did back then. You did all the research for me. Said, listen, Geordie, you don't have to worry. It's going to be fine. You know, and I said to the woman, just get that doctor to call me the minute he comes out of whatever he's doing. So eventually about an hour later and I'm crying. I'm in pieces. I don't know what to tell my boyfriend. What a nightmare. She calls back, and the doctor called back and said, I hear you wanted to talk to me about your results. And I said, yeah, I do, actually. I'm really, really upset and I'm really worried. And I broke down. And he said, I don't know why. It's only candida. It's a bit of thrush. And I was like, what? That's not what your receptionist said. So she got in trouble and I got off the hook with a couple of pessaries. I was fine.
Well, do you know what? That reminds me of a story, which I will tell you after Linda's story, because medical misinformation.
It can be very dangerous.
Really fucking dangerous. And I've got a story about Jen.
Okay. Oh, gosh. Okay.
We'll come back to that. Continue, so anyway, Linda.
We're back to where Linda gets her. She's trying desperately to talk to the GP, but he says to come back in on Monday morning before work.
Honestly, but how the fuck can they leave her hanging all weekend? Honestly, I would be fucking mortified.
Yep.
I'd be scared. I wouldn't be able to sleep.
No.
I'd be anxious.
When you're in that much pain.
Yeah,
of course.
Yeah.
So here she is back on Monday morning. I again arrived at the doctor's, rushed, harassed, coffee in hand, impatient to get to work. The receptionist offered me a cup of tea. What the fuck? I'm like, no, I haven't got time for that in
my
mind.
And I've got a coffee in my hand.
I've got a coffee in my hand. Can't you see? In my mind, I'm thinking, I'm a working mother. I've got shit to do. Well, then the bomb was dropped. I have a massive tumour in my shoulder, on my scapula, and glenoid? or glenoid. I'm not sure what that is. I'm sorry. My mind starts to race. Well, it's not cancer. I feel fine. I've just got a sore shoulder. I was then sent to have full body scans, a mammogram, all sorts of stuff to see if it was, firstly, was it cancer? And secondly, was it the only cancer? I sat frozen in the chair while all this is being arranged. I had this hot feeling taking over my body and I felt suddenly sick. I grabbed the doctor's bin and promptly threw up in it.
Oh my God.
Oh, Linda, you poor thing.
Linda. I did that one day after work. After a work party, went, crawled back into the office and threw up in the bin under my desk.
I hope there was a bin liner in it.
No. Anyway.
I was one of those
moving
mesh.
On.
It was a mesh bin.
Do you know what? Doctor, he should have known that was coming. You can't just drop some fucking bombshell like that and not expect physical reaction.
Exactly.
I'm with you, Linda.
So she chucks in the bin. Then I rang work, and when I was put through to my boss, I couldn't speak, and then the tears started. Fucking hell, Linda. My husband was on a motorbike trip around Australia and was therefore away. I told my son, my mum, and a girlfriend who was a nurse. I was still very positive that it wasn't going to be anything too serious, as I wasn't sick at all. No symptoms. I kept telling myself, it's fine, just a benign tumour. I went to the radiology place, started the process of drinking horrible stuff, injections, scans, then had to go and have the mammogram while waiting for the dye and drinks to work so that I could have the next round of scans. I had the mammogram and the lady asked me to have a seat, but to not put my bra back on. As I sat there, I felt it, a huge, hard mass as big as my hand.
Where?
On her in her boobs.
Oh my God.
I have very large breasts, and it turns out that it was very far back and had started to grow towards the front, and that's why I hadn't felt it before. So she's now touching that thing. She can feel it.
Fucking hell. Oh, my
that's
God.
That's when your stomach flips, right?
Yeah.
The radiographer came back in and said, there is a large mass. And I said, here? And she nodded.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
I had to wait another 2 hours before my other scans to see where else the breast cancer had spread. As I sat in my car, crying hysterically, the universe stepped in. My phone rang. When I answered it, it was one of my very close friends who no longer lives in my area. She said, why are you answering? I was going to leave a message to come straight home. I'm here visiting and wanted to surprise you. So this friend was at her house.
God, okay.
She hung up the phone. I hung up the phone and 20 minutes later, she was sitting next to me, her friend, with a cuppa and tissues. She held my hand through the rest of the tests. I didn't want to worry my husband. He was on the trip of a lifetime, but I knew I couldn't do this by myself. And I called him and said, I need you to come home, which, of course, he did. Riding from North Queensland in 2 days. Yes, that's far. With two mates to make sure he got here OK.
Fucking hell. He must have been beside himself as well.
Yes, I know.
You know. So basically she's got two tumours that they know of.
Yeah.
At this
shoulder
point.
And
shoulder
boob.
And breast.
Yeah.
Boob. Yeah. Breast. Otherwise known as
boobs. Yeah. Before John arrived home, I had an appointment with an oncologist, cancer specialist, for those of you who don't know. Michelle, that's for you.
I know that.
I know. I sat there nervous, hopeful, and he offered me palliative care.
What the fuck?
I know. Straight away.
Straight up?
Yep.
Oh, my God. I'm sorry. That's fucking...
End of life care.
Yes, but that is outrageous.
Yep. So she's just sitting here thinking, okay, so what do we do?
Oh, my God.
He says, go home and get your affairs in order.
Oh, my God. I'm so sorry, but that is basically giving her a fucking death sentence.
I know.
He should be hauled over the fucking coals and struck off the register for that bullshit. You can't treat patients like that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. I'm really angry about that.
Yeah. Well, luckily it was Linda and she has a fire in her belly, as you'll find
out.
I was dumbfounded. Again, not sick, no symptoms, just a sore shoulder. I had planned that the next year would be a bit shit while I had my treatment. My girlfriends had planned fabulous earrings and scarves for me. Not hooped. I don't want to look like a pirate. And then I would get on with it. Raise money for breast cancer or something that would be that. Well, no, he informs me that I have stage 4 cancer. And guess what, Michelle? I thought that there was a stage 5 and 6. I didn't know that that's the top end. There's nothing past stage 4. So he tells Linda she's got stage 4 cancer, which means it cannot be cured and therefore I should get my affairs in order and enjoy the rest of my life, which will probably be less than 2 years.
Oh my fucking God.
She's a teenage son.
Oh my God. Honestly, I feel like I've got goosebumps on my arms from this because, I mean, obviously we know there's a happy ending to this, but
we do.
I just can't even fucking imagine being told that.
It could be and has been for other people's stories the worst case scenario. But luckily, Linda, I mean, this is why I love her so much. You'll find out there's more. Back to Linda. Again, the heat starts to rise. I feel physically sick, but I'm also angry. I remind him that I'm well, I have no symptoms, I'm young and have a family. He starts telling me about statistics.
Oh, fuck off, statistics.
Exactly. I tell him I'm not a statistic, I'm a human, and that I'm not dying for fuck's sake.
Go, Linda!
Go, Linda! I then let him know that he's not for me, and I come home to see my GP, get a list of oncologists and surgeons, make back-to-back appointments, and interview them all. Then I hear the same story, the same heated, sick feeling everywhere I go. My husband, who is probably one of the politest people I know, became increasingly angry and rude until my last appointment. Dr. David Long, who is now my very dear friend and saviour, read my notes, looked at me, cocked his head to the side and said, I had it all worked out what I was going to say to you, but you know what? I think you're a bit of an anomaly. I think you are young, fit, perfectly healthy aside from the cancer bit, no organs involved. While it is said you can't cure stage 4 cancer, I think we can treat you with a curative thank you, approach. And who knows, it might work. What have you got to lose?
Fucking love you, David Long.
A little ray of light comes shining through.
But you know what? Good on her for just going from doctor to doctor to doctor. And finding someone who believed what she believed, which is, I'm not fucking sick enough to be planning my funeral.
Exactly.
Oh my God.
Finally, someone who saw me as a person, not a statistic, and who is willing to take the punt. David, Dr. Long. It says L-E-O-N-G. I'm pronouncing it long because I think that's how you pronounce it. Is that right?
Leung. Dr. Leung.
Dr. Long. Then put together a team of the best breast cancer specialists in the country and we got to work. Nearly 3 years down the track, I'm still here. Most importantly, I have not had any disease progression. I have scans every 3 months. I see the oncologist every month and I take pills every day. I am lucky. 1 month after being diagnosed, a new drug was released for people with stage 4 cancer. So she's on this drug. And so not great.
Is she part of a trial or?
I think it had been trialed, but then it was released. It had just been released. It was like the universe aligned for her.
Absolutely.
Now, the drug isn't fun. It's not fun for her.
None of them.
And I think 3 weeks out of, I get it wrong all the time, I'm going to say it wrong, but it's about every 3 weeks or something she has to have a week on. Or maybe it's a week on, 2 weeks off. And she's very sick for that time, but she manages, you know, and it's better than the alternative.
Yeah. And, you know, and she's a little Aussie battler.
She sure is.
She's strong. Strong-minded.
I have had breast surgery, soldier shirt surgery, a hysterectomy to put me into menopause to make me eligible for this drug. I have had radiation therapy and take a chemo-like drug. I won't go into the science of it all. It's too much to take in. And if it's not your struggle, you'll forget anyway. But it's all pretty amazing. Yes, there are side effects, but they all beat dying. So I suck it up and get on with it. When I look back at this time, I find that my mind does not dwell on the trauma. But I looked back at some things that I wrote at the time and I am reminded that I was devastated, a highly overused word, I believe, but I was. Shit scared, highly emotional, grief stricken, grieving the life I thought I would have, and devastated, there it is again, about the life I would have to live. I was heartbroken for my family that they had to be dragged through this pile of crap. I fought every day to stop myself from drowning in self-pity and to stop myself from spreading it to everyone I came into contact with. I clearly remember being so scared that they would cut away at me until there was nothing left of the old me. But my sister reminded me that I am more than that and there is more to me than this. The fear of no future was overwhelming, even though I do love a good dystopian story. This was too much. The fear for my family, I could see them unravelling, and the overwhelming sense of guilt because it was me causing it. I still struggle with mother guilt. I really feel like I let my son down at a time when it should have been all about him. I know it affected his schooling, his friendships, and his mental health. He went from being a happy young man to an angry one, and that still rears its ugly head occasionally. He began engaging in risk-taking behavior, which led to a near overdose of illicit drugs. The relationship between my son and his dad started to break down because they were so angry, and they took it out on each other. My oncology social worker said this is very common and that many families break down irrevocably. Again, I am lucky we were able to pull it back together. So it's not just your fucking health which is under fire in this process.
No,
it's your,
of course
it's other
not.
People. It's the people around you. It's your family unit gets destroyed. Can be destroyed. It's terrible.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? You never know how people are going to react. And even though Linda's had, you know, a miraculous outcome, it's ongoing.
Mm.
It's ongoing. And that doesn't mean that the anxiety and the stress ever stops for her or for the family. Because I guess you're living with an illness where you just have to get on and make the most of every day because you don't know it about tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow is promised to no one.
Absolutely,
you know?
Yeah.
So it really can take a toll. Fuck, Linda, I'm so happy to hear that, you know, you and your family have pulled through, but fucking tough times.
Trauma, yeah. If you have a friend or family member who faces something like this, I have a list of things that are not helpful.
I would love to hear this because I'm actually going through something at the moment with a friend and I often wonder, am I saying the wrong thing? Am I texting the wrong thing?
Yeah.
It's really tough. So I would love some advice.
Well, I believe in times like this, it's best to just speak from the heart and forget about what you're supposed to say and maybe just maybe be a little bit careful. But Linda has really laid it out perfectly for you. Here we go. Things that are not helpful. Telling them to be strong. They probably are and don't need to be reminded.
Thank you.
Yeah. Telling them to be positive. Get fucked. What do you know? They will oscillate from strength to weaknesses. Let them, and if it's too much, shut your mouth and go home.
Good advice. Fuck off.
Fuck off. Sharing your sad, tragic story of whoever you know who died from cancer. We all know cancer kills, especially someone that has it. Don't say to a cancer patient or someone who's been diagnosed, oh, I knew someone who got cancer too. Yeah, it turns out he died. She doesn't want to hear that. Yeah, it was really bad. Oh, yeah, well, he lasted a couple of years. She doesn't want to hear that. They don't want to hear that.
No one wants to hear that. No, I thought I took it a different way. I thought you meant like bring up your cancer survivor story. Like, you know, don't worry, hang in there.
Minimizing it, trying to compare it to the flu.
Oh, your, what the fuck?
Your sore toe or whatever shit you're whining about today. For fuck's sake. Now,
are you joking? Who the fuck would do that?
Well, I imagine that she wouldn't have put it in here had she not experienced it. Which horrifies me. Sorry, Linda. Oh,
no, but you know what? I know there are moaning minis out there. Like, you can have the most horrific, tragic story and then they'll say, oh, Jens, but oh, me.
My toe hurts.
Yeah, and you're like, oh, go fuck yourself. Anyway.
Or what about this one? Telling someone that you might have it too or are more likely to get it than them. I have it, fuckwit. Just to be relevant or some such bullshit. You don't know till you know. And be careful what you wish for.
Oh, my God. Who even says that? Do these people have brain cells? I might have it too.
Oh, that's okay because I might have it. So we got it together.
That is fucking ridiculous.
I haven't got
ridiculous.
The diagnosis, but I mean, who says that? Anyway.
Linda, who are you hanging out with? I hope it's students
it now.
Who said this bullshit. Oh my God.
Here's some things that are helpful. Laughter. Surround yourself with people who make you laugh, not dismissing the seriousness, but who can see the very black, funny side of life.
Yes.
Cry. I like this one. When you need to, with who you need to.
Good idea.
Just cry it out.
Yeah,
there's nothing wrong with crying or bursting into tears when you're talking to someone. I don't have a problem with that.
No, and I think you have to have it as a release valve. You have to just bawl your fucking eyes out if that's what you need to do. You've got to get it out.
I think we've always been conditioned to not show your emotions like that because it makes you look weak. But fuck that. If I want to cry when I'm talking to someone, I'll just cry.
I think there literally is not a day that goes by where I don't have a tear.
Have a tear.
Have a tear.
Getting cut?
Nah. But I cry every day, I would say.
Yeah.
And about bullshit things too. About like some kind of okay. I mean, I cry at Bake Off, you know, just stupid shit. It's
happy
not sad
things make
crying.
Me cry too.
Yeah, I cry. Yes. I cry at happy things, emotional things. I'm always having a tear.
Tear. Listen actively. Pay attention. Don't judge. And don't voice those judgments. Keep them to yourself.
That's a very good idea. That's life lesson, actually. Absolutely. Thanks for that one, Linda. That's life advice.
Be present. If you're with that person, be with them. Make a day out of doctor's appointments. Make it normal or even fun.
That's a nice idea. Mm. But that also kind of feeds into the, you know, surround yourself with people who can make you laugh.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, who can see the lighter side, yeah, or can take you to the lighter side when you're feeling around in the darkness.
Because everything's changed, hasn't it, for you, for your whole life. Suddenly, one day you're feeling like, oh, I've got a sore shoulder. Next day, you've got this
fucking big
guillotine above your head.
Cannot even imagine.
It would be awful. Christ. So that's why you need the people around you to make it normal, make it okay, you know, because everything has changed. Your life will be different now.
Yep.
Hug them. There is nothing better than physically showing your love and support.
Of course. But when you're so far away, you just got to send an emoji.
Absolutely.
I guess.
Or touch elbows now. Oh, you can't even do that now, can you? I can't, in this country, you can't do. Oh, guess what? You know, it's snowing. There was apparently Boris, our buffoon of a prime minister. Sorry, Boris, but you are. Said you can go and make snowmen, but only outside.
What the fuck? Who's making a snowman inside? I'm sorry.
Just to reiterate, we are in lockdown.
What a fucking knob. Sorry.
Another thing that's helpful, talk about it or other stuff, whatever the mood brings. That's her top tips. Yeah,
that's a good one. I struggle with that at the moment because my friend doesn't want to talk.
Right,
it's too much, and I keep offering the opportunity, but equally I can't push.
No, you can't. If they don't want to talk, then you can't force it.
No, and like Linda said at the beginning, you know, this is her journey. Everyone's journey is different. You know, same cancer, different journey.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly. Jesus. So this is Linda again. I live in a relatively small community and I have a very public job. So it pretty quickly became known that I have breast cancer. The support of family, friends, colleagues and the community generally were amazing and an extremely humbling experience for me. My friends and family were and continue to be amazing. They love me. They celebrate with me, cry with me and pick me up when I need it. What a blessing. 3 years down the line, how do I feel? Well, that is complicated. I have moments of anger and being generally pissed off, especially when I'm sitting in a hospital waiting room with elderly sick people around me and I ask myself, what am I doing here?
Yeah.
They look at me and think, what's she doing here? Because I don't look sick. It annoys me that I must spend time on this crap like an old person when I'm not and shouldn't have to. But really, I do.
Yeah.
I'm uncomfortable when acquaintances ask me questions or make statements like, oh, you look great. Are you back at work yet? I never left work. I was blessed to have been supported to come and go as I needed to.
That's fantastic. The school was behind her like that.
The other kicker is, so look at you. You look great. So pleased you are all over all of that. I know that is not from understanding, but I'm uncomfortable. I don't know what to say. I've learnt to nod and say, yeah, it's great.
I know.
I think I read that badly, but basically people saying, oh, look how it looks like you've really kicked it. Well done. You're all better now. Off you trot.
For Linda to have to say, well, actually, I'm still doing this, still doing that. It's no fun to have that conversation. So I can see why she just nods and just goes, yeah, fuck off. Bye-bye.
Moving along. Yeah.
Yep.
The relentlessness of constant drug cycles, scans, blood tests and doctor's visits gets me down. I'm sick of it, but I have no choice. So I just do it and try not to complain too much.
Yeah.
I'm sick of feeling sick because I wasn't sick before. It's the drugs that make me sick. But again, I just pop another pill to fix the effects of the other pill. This is really against my idea of life. I've never been a pill taker, legal or illicit. But now I'm like, bring it on. If it will fix whatever I need fixing. Exactly. Yeah. Fatigue is real. Never thought that before, but it is. It's different from being tired. It's tiredness that gets into your bones and muscles, and it's shit.
Can you imagine just that feeling of exhaustion? Mm. You know, and you know that it's...
And you've got things to do, and you think, like, oh, why can't I get out of bed or
off the sofa? But even more than that, like, I wonder if that has a mental effect, you know, the physical fatigue, and just if you're in a weak moment, I wonder if that just really fucking zaps you.
I bet it does, yeah. So there's a lot of struggling daily by the sound of it. What have I learnt along the way? Again, it's complicated, but also simple. I no longer sweat the small shit. If my house isn't tidy or my hair's not done and I get visitors, great. I have quieted that nasty voice in my head that said I was never good enough, smart enough, thin enough, never enough. That voice is gone. It's all shit. Yep. People either love you or they don't. The rest is crap. I am more definitive in my decisions. It's either hell yeah or fuck no. I love that.
Me too. That, again, that is life advice.
Absolutely. I no longer do things out of guilt, obligation, or because I'm scared that opportunity won't arise again. Maybe I wasn't meant to do it, or if it's for me, it will arise again. I stop chasing things, money, career, whatever. I've got a great life and I don't need the rest.
Oh, God. And do you know what? She's alive. Mm-hmm. She's alive. And I bet you that just puts everything into the most
perspective.
Yeah, the most clear perspective you've ever had in your whole life. I mean, I've been very blessed and never had a health scare like that. But, you know, obviously people around me have. Mm. And yeah, it does make you fucking think.
Reevaluate.
What's important to me? And once you know what's important to you, that's what you focus on. And it looks like that's what Linda's doing.
It's a great example to us all. I have learnt to live with death. We all die. I may just die earlier than I expected. I'm not a spiritual person and I really think faith would help, but I don't have it, never have. However, I also believe that our lives are about our relationships with people. So while you are alive in their memories, you live on. We are all lost in history eventually, whether you were an emperor or a serf. Death is ever present in my life. However, it used to be right in front of me. Then it was on my shoulder and I carried it around. Now it follows me and I can live with that. I just move faster.
Oh, Linda.
I know, it's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
My pharmacist, obviously you form a close bond with these medical guys.
Oh, Jesus.
Asked me today how I stay happy all the time. He said, I inspire him. I was really uncomfortable because I'm not happy all the time. That's weird. But I do consciously try to be optimistic. There is no secret. The glass is half full. That's who I am. I chose to be as happy as I can be. I get up every day. I go out. I live while I'm alive. If I don't, it wins.
And it's a waste, you know. She's been given a second chance.
Exactly.
Well, she fought for a second chance.
Well,
my
she
God.
Made that happen, absolutely. She could have just gone home and would have been dead within 2 years. We wouldn't have her to tell her story now. But thank God she has that spirit inside her.
Oh, God. Amazing, Linda. Honestly, you're inspiration to us all. Yeah. Really? Oh, fantastic story. Oh, thank you so much for sharing that.
Thanks, Linda. So really, she's achieved so much in such a short period of time.
She has. She really has. And I think, you know, one of the takeaway messages from this is her positivity, her mental strength through all of that. Even though she says, you know, it's up and down and she doesn't feel happy all the time. And, you know, she's strong. She's really strong.
And you don't have to have cancer or a life-threatening disease to put all of those things that she's written about there into your life. Like right now would be a great time to start actively letting your emotions out as and when you need.
Yeah, of course. And just understanding what's important to you and not giving a fuck about what people think about you.
Hell yeah or fuck no. Like it.
Hell yeah, fuck no. And not caring about obligation. If you don't want to do it, don't fucking do it.
Yeah.
You know, it seems harder than it is, but when you've got when you've had a potential death sentence right in front of you and then you've like kicked it to the curb.
Yeah.
I can imagine you just go, fuck it. I'm going to do whatever the fuck I want.
Totally. So tell me, what happened to Jen? Was she all right? Did she have a shock?
Oh, God. Well, So I hope Jen's all right with me talking about this. Jen's a cancer survivor.
I knew that.
You remember this.
Yeah.
You were hearing all about it at the time. So Jen, back in 2014, Jen had cancer.
Was it that long ago now?
Yeah. Time flies.
Wow.
Time flies when you're a cancer survivor. And she, I think, sort of had a feeling that something wasn't right, and you know, went to the doctor and she got diagnosed with cancer. And I remember at the time, and I shouldn't be laughing about cancer because it's not a funny subject, but it's Jen.
If you don't laugh, you cry.
It's true. I remember when she said she had cancer, loads of her friends said, oh, you know, Jen, it's all those ciggies. She's like, I haven't got lung cancer, I've got colon cancer. And so she's like, all these people, just because I'm a smoker, and she's there puffing away, loves her ciggies, smoked throughout the whole cancer treatment.
Oh my God.
She gave it up while she was in the hospital, but afterwards, straight back on the fags. Anyway, got to do what you love, don't you?
That's right. If you love a fag.
Yeah. So anyway, she had colon cancer and it was really very serious. Really, really very serious. She was touch and go at quite a few points throughout the treatment. But going back to sort of medical mishaps, she had to have radiation. And it was her first radiation treatment, and she'd gone to the clinic and she was sitting there and they called her up. Jenny, are you here? Yep, come through. So she went there, lay on the bench, and the nurse is putting everything on, like all the stuff. And anyway, this radiation machine comes and it points at her head. And Mum said, excuse me, why is this at my head? And they went, oh, it's okay, Jenny. It's because you've got brain cancer. And Mum said, what the fuck? I don't have brain cancer. I've got colon cancer. And they said,
wrong end, love.
Well, they're like, are you Jenny Jones? And she's like, no. And I'm like, oh, God. So they just called the wrong Jenny in for the wrong fucking radiation treatment.
Oh.
So they could have radiated poor Jen's brain. Anyway.
Imagine that.
I know. But luckily she spoke up for herself, because a lot of, you know, people, certainly of her age bracket,
they have this doctor
knows best mentality.
They trust. Yeah. That's like Linda didn't. And she went ahead and asked for more, you know. So it really does pay to know a bit about the inside of your body, what it should look like, double check, maybe, you know, ask for second opinions.
So, yeah.
But saying that, you know, our medical professionals are doing a great job right now.
Yes, they
occasionally
do.
Occasionally there are things that will slip through the net. But
like radiating someone's brain.
Or getting their receptionist to tell you that you have chlamydia.
Oh, but God.
You have to work with them. You can't just sit back and relax and say, okay, you're the professional, you take care of it. You need to have a little bit of, you need to take control of your own health.
Look, you say that, but I just went through a situation recently where Andreas's father was diagnosed with cancer. And he's in Sweden and he's in the Swedish system. Now, when Jen had cancer, I ended up going to Australia and I was in the hospital with her for probably about nearly 6 to 8 weeks. I was there every single day going to the hospital. Jen, I love you, but you were a bit tricky sometimes in the hospital. And you know, I would go in there every day with boxes of chocolates for the nurses, bags of little like Cadbury's Easter eggs and things. I think it was around that time. And just, you know, I would say, oh, I'm so sorry. I know mum can be difficult. And they'd be like, oh, we'll take the chocolates, but don't worry, she's fine. And then one day the nurse actually pulled me aside and said, listen, we do love that you bring these chocolates every day, but Jen is fantastic. She is a fighter. Yes, she can be a pain in the bum because, for example, the lady in the bed next to her brought in a bunch of flowers and some kind of fly must have come in with the flowers. So she asked me to bring a fly swat in. So I did. Anyway, I then hear rumors from the nurses. She had the fly swat. She was swatting the doctors. Get away from me. I don't want to take that pill.
She used it as a weapon and she got you to bring it in under false pretenses.
Yeah. And then Honestly, one day I remember sitting there and the nurse came and she said, "Hi, Jen, are you okay? Have you got any pain?" And she looked at me and she went, "Yeah, her." And I was like, "Mom." So Mum had a lot of fight in her. And this is what the nurse said. She said, "Listen, we'll take your chocolates, but, you know, your mom has so much fight in her and we much prefer that she has a fighting spirit than the lady in the next bed who has just given up, who's ready to die. So, you know, like, go Jen. You know, she was she was not giving up. She was fighting this cancer." But the thing is, you know, there were things that went wrong. Like, I remember being in the emergency because they had actually told me she was fine. We took her home and it was the most terrifying fucking night of my life.
I remember this, yes.
Yeah. And they said, "Oh, she can go home." And I said, "Listen, I'm not a nurse. I'm not a carer. I don't feel equipped to be able to deal with something if something goes wrong." And of course, took her home and it did go wrong. And I had to make a call really fucking quickly about what to do and ended up taking her later that evening. I realized she was slipping away.
Shit.
Taking her into the hospital and they had said if you hadn't brought her in, she wouldn't have made it.
Oh my God, Michelle.
And that's a big fucking responsibility for someone who's not a nurse, you know, with no training. And I remember they were trying to intubate her and I was looking at her, they were putting it down the wrong way. She couldn't breathe. I had to scream in the emergency room, "What are you doing? Stop it. She can't breathe."
Oh, God, and how traumatic.
Oh, God, you know, there's just so many things. But my whole point of saying all of this is that Mum was really lucky that she had somebody there advocating for her every day.
Yeah, yeah. But
otherwise, and, you know, I was there like, well, yeah. But the thing is, like, I was there like with my phone taking pictures every day of her notes on the end of her bed and Googling like what they'd done, medications, you know, getting myself really up to speed. So this was my experience. So then when Andreas's father was diagnosed with cancer, I was like, right, you got to ask this question, blah, 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 blah. Like, I had this whole list of stuff. And Andreas was just like, "Listen, that's not how we do it in Sweden. We just trust that the medical professionals know what they're doing." I was like, whoa, okay. And I really thought, fuck, I need to back off here. And I was like, okay, yeah, apologies, sorry. And I let them do it their way. He sailed through that operation. Everything went well. He has had the most miraculous recovery. And I don't know if it's a different system, a different cultural experience. I don't know if it's just
pure trust,
Swedish medical system, but I came from the opposite end of the spectrum. And I mean, you know, like, Mum had a great outcome and so did Andreas's dad. But they got there in two very different ways.
Absolutely. And
yeah, it was a real lesson to me.
Wow, that is interesting.
Yeah, I can't put my experience of my mum's, and back to Linda, everyone's journey is different. I couldn't put that my experience onto Andreas's father's experience. And that was actually a real lesson for me. But I... back to Jen, I remember when I went back... 2 years ago, I think it was, when and I took Mum on the cruise. That was then, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. 2 years ago when we were both in Australia.
Yeah.
So I, you know, Mum had survived cancer. She's great, by the way. You know, she's doing so well. She survived cancer and she really wanted to go on a cruise. So I took Jen on a cruise.
Cruising.
Cruise. And so anyway, you know, they have all this like onboard entertainment on your cruise ship.
That's classic.
Yeah, classic. And it's like, I mean, you know what? Like, you just have to go with the flow. Like, it's all good fun. And
did you find yourself doing the samba with any 70-year-olds, Michelle?
No. But we did go to the singles night. There was only ladies there.
Oh, okay. Thank goodness.
I know. Mum was like, "Put on this lipstick for nothing." Anyway.
So she was hunting for a man, hoping for an octogenarian.
She's five cancer. She's ready to roll. But, But yeah, we went to this comedy night and there was a dude there who was the comedian and he was a cancer survivor. And I think he'd had testicular cancer. Yeah, his whole act was all about, "I survived testicular cancer." And we were sitting there and Mum's like, "It's not funny. oh, I had that. That happened to me. And I'm like, Mom, come on, just like go with it. Anyway, to my surprise, afterwards, she said, oh, let's go down and meet him. Because in the end, she's like, oh, he was all right. He was all right. He was a bit funny. So she went down. She's like, hi, I'm a cancer survivor too.
That was her chat-up line.
Yeah. So she said to him, oh, yeah, you know, liked your show. And I thought, no, you bloody didn't. But anyway, and he said, oh, you know, congratulations on being a survivor too. What cancer did you have? And she turned to me and she's like, I don't remember. What cancer did I have? And she just didn't even remember. And I was like, Mom, colorectal. And she's like, oh, yes, that's right. So, you know, she sort of.
Maybe she didn't want to say that it was colorectal.
No, she literally didn't remember, I think.
Oh, okay.
I think she just. I mean, maybe they did radiate a brain. No, sorry, Jen. They didn't. No, but she just didn't remember. And she's just funny. But, I mean, hats off to her. She really has had a fantastic recovery. And
well done, Jen.
Yeah, you know, and actually brought us closer together.
Yeah,
When we were in the hospital going through the dark days together. Yeah. So, yeah. And I'm glad she's still here. And she's,
yes,
honestly, nice, she's
listening away to every episode of Eavesdropping.
Didn't like QAnon, but that's all right, Jen. You live to tell the tale.
Well, I hope she enjoys this episode. It might be as serious as cancer, but that's why rhythm is a dancer.
Oh, and there you go. There you go. But yes, for anyone who's had cancer touch their lives, it's really fucking serious.
Yeah.
You know, it's the other C word. But
what's the first one? COVID.
See what? You next Tuesday.
Oh, see you next Tuesday. Of course.
But yeah, it's tough for anyone going through it, family. And I mean, obviously that's the only perspective that I come from is being an observer. And like I said, I've got a friend who's going through the aftermath of losing someone to cancer, and it's really fucking tough. And I half the time don't know what to say, and half the time I, like you say, I just shoot from the hip and try and make her laugh. But then you think, am I belittling the situation? Am I not giving it the gravity it needs? But then I think, you know, laughter is the best medicine.
If that's all you've got to give.
That's all I've got. I can't go to Australia even give her a hug.
Yeah.
Fucking COVID bullshit right now. So it's tough times. But,
yes,
you know, Linda, I am sending you the biggest hug possible.
Me too, Linda.
From where I am. And a big hug to you, Jen, too.
Big hugs to you, Jen. And you know what, ladies, both of you, thank you for your fight. Thank you for still being there to be able to give us something to tell our listeners. I hope they hadn't tuned in for more QAnon because obviously you're not going to get it. But no. It's a real thing that people are having to cope with every day.
Yeah, it's true. And, you know, Mum has been really inspiring. You know, she lives on her own. She gets up, she does everything herself. She has no help. She has no carers, no cleaning. She does it all. And she's, you know, she's a cancer survivor. And bless you, Mom. Like, you're amazing. And Linda, you're amazing too. Anyone,
absolutely.
Anyone going through this stuff, fucking hats off to all of you.
We raise all our inspiring hats to you.
Yep.
Absolutely.
And if I had a little glass of bubbly, I'd raise that to you as well.
I'm raising my imaginary. What have I got? Nothing.
Brown lemonade.
Today. It's not a brown. I can't wait to have a brown lemonade. I'm still dry. It's still the end of Jan.
God, I don't like when you say you're dry.
Dry. I'm on the dry January.
Oh, dear. Anyway.
But listen, we better wrap it up now. I would like to just put a call out to all of those eavesdroppers out there. If you're enjoying this, please can you just share and let everybody know? Because what have we got now? A new Instagram?
We've got new Instagram, eavesdroppin underscore. And the website's going to be live next week, so keep an eye out for that.
And we've got the Facebook page, Michelle. What's that called?
We do have the Facebook page, Eavesdroppin Podcast.
That's it. Eavesdropping with no G.
Yeah, mate. Eavesdropping.
Yeah, mate.
Yep. And look out on the Instagram for more videos from Geordie.
We're going to be interacting. We think that what happened, the reason why we had our first Instagram account shut was because they've come down very hard on QAnon things. And I think because we mentioned QAnon, that's why.
Oh my goodness. Do you know what, though? It was blessing in disguise because you're doing great on the Instagram. So
thanks, Michelle. Who hands up who wants to see some videos of Michelle as well?
No,
me. I do.
We'll see. I have to be in the mood.
Glamorous life in the Alps.
I have to be in the mood.
In the nude?
In the mood.
Oh. All right, then. Nude. That's us. We're done. You're off to take off your robe and be in the nude.
And you're there with your lovely little scarf on, out to have a frolic in the snow.
No, it's all wet. It's all slush now.
Oh, dear. All right. Yeah.
It's all dick and balls, as the Swedish say.
Dick and balls. And on that note, adios.
Eavesdropping.